everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go. All right, there you go. Well, it's good to see everybody, and thank you. And whether you've been here a long time or it's your first time, really glad you're here. And let's cheer for our Melissa campus, too. They'll be hearing this. And we're so excited. And it's the beginning of all kinds of things God's going to do up there, just like he does at all of our campuses. And today, we are starting a new series called About Love. And if you've ever, you probably don't walk around singing it, you know, I want to know what love is, I want you to show me. But, and that was pretty good, I have to say, that little solo, I don't do it very often. But you probably don't walk around singing it. However, your soul does. Like every one of our souls is built for connection, deep connection. Just like our phones are, you know, are always looking, whether it's cellular or Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, always looking for connection. Our soul does the same thing. And in this series, we're going to be looking at how Jesus came not only to connect us with himself, but with other people, with each other, in a way that we can flourish in a much more meaningful way. And so we're going to be looking at love and what it means to live more deeply into that. It'll change all of our relationships, as we'll see today. And kind of a subtitle of the series would be something about the four loves. And what I mean by the four loves is this. So in English, love, we have this one word, love, that is really broad. So I can say in the same paragraph, I love Jesus and I love Chick-fil-A. Well, I mean, of course, yeah, those go together. But, right, but those are very different. I could say I love my wife, Christy, and I love Alabama football. All that's true, right? But those are very different types of love, very different experiences. And because English has this, we have one real word for love. It's this big word that encompasses a whole lot of things. In the language of the New Testament, the language that the New Testament writers spoke and Jesus, you know, all, they didn't have one word for love. They had four words for love in their culture, and that's reflected in the Bible. And it's much more specific, and when you look at the four loves, you realize, yeah, the only way to really flourish in life is to experience all four of these in a deeper and deeper way, in a wiser way. And here's the four loves, and these are Greek words. Again, the New Testament written in Greek, that's why Greek is relevant. The first word is storge, familial affection. The second love is phileo, friendship. Third love is eros, desire. Not only sexual and romantic desire, but that certainly is encompassed there. And agape, which is sacrificial commitment. Each week of this series, four-week series, and we'll do each week a different one of the four loves. Today is storge, familial affection. It's the most basic of all loves. It's that thing in us that longs to be accepted as we are, to be loved no matter what. It's family, it's home, it's acceptance, it's warmth. Hopefully you've experienced that. Hopefully your home had, you know, growing up, not every home has that. I hope yours did. I hope this summer you had some times where you got together with extended family, and because there's just something about extended family that it's not perfect and there's little bumps and bruises in relationships, but you're still family. And crazy Uncle Eddie is, yeah, always going to be crazy Uncle Eddie, but you still love him. Because he's in the family, right? That's storge, familial affection. And Jesus came to bring a whole new level of storge for everybody, a whole new level of connection. And that's what we're going to dive into because not everybody experiences this. My grandmother, my mom's mom, that I called Nanny is an example of that. She grew up in and around Waco, Texas, so she's a Texan. And she did not have a very easy childhood. So when she was 8 years old, her mom died. There were six family, six brothers and sisters. And The one thing that her mom, when she was dying, made her dad promise is that you will not split up the kids. You will not, you will keep the family together. And I'm sure he tried, but in just a couple of weeks, he was so overwhelmed that one day he left and he never came home. And I mean, literally, kids just there. The way people found out about it is, I think it was my grandmother went to a neighbor's house to ask for milk for the baby because it was crying. And they're like, where's your dad, you know? And he never came back. And so the kids were split up in different places. Literally, they just did this thing of, in this, you know, anybody want a kid? And she ended up in the home that where there was no storge, at least not for her. There was no familial affection. That particular woman, it was a couple, but the woman really wanted a domestic worker, and that's what she became. So she started doing, and the lady was abusive. She was mean. I'm sure a lot of mental challenges, and it was a very difficult environment, enough that even as an 8-year-old, she decided one night that she was going to run away, that she couldn't keep doing that. So she's walking down the street, the country road. They were out in the middle of the country, walking what she thought was toward town, which would have been Waco. And a car is driving up, and she's like, oh no, I hope it's not her. And it wasn't, it was the husband. And the husband stops, and she says, I can't go back. And he says, honey, I know. I don't expect you to go back. I'm so sorry for what's happened to you. I'm so sorry for how you're treated. And yet, I don't want to just leave you on the road, so let me drive you into town. It's not exactly what a Hallmark movie would do, but he drove her into town and just left her in town and drove away. She had no money. She didn't really know anybody, and she didn't know what to do, but at least she was not in that situation. And so she walked around Waco. It was real late at night, and she's tired and sleepy. She's a Methodist church, and goes up to that Methodist church. It's closed, it's late at night. There were shrubs next to the wall, the side wall, and so she goes into those shrubs and goes to sleep. Early that morning, the groundskeeper finds a little 8-year-old girl asleep in the shrubs and wakes her up and says, you know, who are you? What's going on? And he brings her to the pastor and his wife, who live on the campus. Parsonage is what they lived in, a house. Pastors, that used to be a common thing, would live on the church property in a house. And so took my grandmother to this pastor and his wife, who had always prayed for, never able to have children of their own, always prayed that God would allow them to have a family. And all of a sudden, here's this little girl. And long story short, they're able to adopt her into her family. She grew up in a super loving home, super supportive home, because she found what we all long for. She found storge. She found familial connection. You and I cannot thrive or function without it. Well, but it doesn't just come from biological family. In fact, Jesus came to bring it for everybody by forming a new family that we call church. And what church is, from a biblical perspective, is not just some institution, it's not some show, it's not some organization, it's not a business, it's not a whatever. Church is family. That's the most prominent way the Bible talks about church, as the household of God, the family of God. That when you and I begin a relationship with Jesus, it's not a personal relationship with Jesus, it's actually a shared relationship with Jesus. We're pulled into a family. The family of God. We're adopted as sons and daughters. We're brother and sister to each other. And the only way we can actually live the Christian life is in connection with other people. And that's our big idea today, is that when you say yes to following Jesus, you're saying yes, not to a me life, but a we life. Not to a personal relationship with Jesus, but a shared relationship with Jesus. You and I cannot have a relationship with Jesus that is growing and be isolated, because he ministers to us through one another. We're gonna see that today. And therefore, the Christian life is a we life. It's a shared life. It's a family life, where anybody and everybody can be folded into God's family and find storge. But it doesn't just happen. It takes devotion. It takes commitment. It takes some disciplines, especially in a culture like ours, Because we live in such a busy culture, a distracted culture digitally. We live in such a divided culture into tribes and, you know, people who are like this, people who are like that, us versus them world. And we live in a very individualistic culture, not a communal culture. So it means to really live into the way of life that Jesus came to bring us, to live into storge more fully. It's awesome. It's really cool when you do, but most people don't. And the invitation for all of us today is to say, well, how can I take a step deeper into the kind of storge, familial affection that Jesus came to bring? And Romans 12:10 says this. It requires something of us. Be devoted to one another in storge. That's our word, in love. Be devoted to one another in storge. That it's not just going to happen. We're not going to drift into storge. We have to be devoted to certain things. There are certain disciplines that will lead to that way of life. And when you get to that and you start tasting that way of life, you're like, oh, that's awesome. But at the beginning, the payoff may not be that clear. It takes discipline. So today we're going to see a picture of what the storge looks like, or the family of God looks like, what familial affection in the church looks like, by looking at the early church, and we'll isolate from that three disciplines that all of us, I'm going to encourage all of us to think through, okay, how can I, even starting today, starting this week, how can I live more fully into each of these? The first, well, before we look at the disciplines, let's read the passage. So in Acts 2 is the very first church. The first church, Christianity starts in Jerusalem. This is the Jerusalem church. As I read this passage, I want you to think of the church's family and what it would have been like to be in this dynamic environment. Here it is. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Now, stop for a second to say, do you see the word devoted again? It didn't happen because it was natural. It happened because they were devoted. They were disciplined. They were committed to this. Everyone was filled with awe, saying, very good. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying favor of all the people, talking about people who were not them, people who were not church, people outside of Christianity. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved, meaning people who began a relationship with God and came into the family every day that was happening. What an environment, right? You're thinking, man, how cool is that? Three disciplines to get there. The first discipline is to include everybody, to have an include everybody way of life, to just go through life, not just thinking about, hey, I'm here and are people gonna introduce themselves to me, but to say, no, I'm actually gonna go out of my way. I'm gonna be disciplined to be inclusive, to include everybody. And when you look at the passage, you'll see a lot of words like they all, anyone, everyone. There was no bar of entry. There was no qualification other than a human being loved by God. That was it. Anyone and everyone were invited. They came and were accepted, whether they believed or not yet. As people came into the family, they were accepted and they were loved. And it was the first diverse group of people en masse on the planet. It was Christianity. The world then is like ours now, only more so, very stratified into this race and that race and citizen, Roman citizen, not citizen, wealthy, poor, slave, free, all that in their world. Those groups did not mix, but in the church they did. Anyone and everyone, no matter what, was pulled in. Nobody had to wonder, would I be accepted there? They knew they'd be accepted there. I'm sure you remember, or maybe you still watch the show, The Office. And one of those characters, Dwight Schrute, here he is. Dwight, interesting guy, a little twisted. Here's a Dwight Schrute quote. He said, I never smile if I can help it. Showing one's teeth is a submission signal in primates. When someone smiles at me, all I see is a chimpanzee begging for its life. That's twisted, okay? That's Dwight, if you know the show. Well, that's Dwight Schrute, the character, but the one who plays Dwight Schrute, Rainn Wilson, is a very different kind of person. He's a very thoughtful person. He's not a Christian, He's Baha'i, but he wrote a book about 2 years ago on organized religion. And what he argues in the book is, and you hear that and you think, oh boy, here we go. He's going to pound organized religion. Organized religion's ruining the world and all that. But that's the opposite. This book is about, hey, you don't want a world without organized religion. Because when you look at most of the good stuff that happens in our world, it's going to come back to organized religion. And so he talks about the beauty and the power of organized religion, talks a whole lot about Christianity in a positive way. And so he's been on a lot of podcasts, Christian podcasts, talking about the book and talking about his idea. And you can tell, and I've heard him in different podcasts over the 2 years, and you can tell he's getting closer and closer and closer to Jesus. He's a huge Jesus admirer. He's just not a Jesus follower yet. But you just feel like, okay, this is coming. But here, real recently, just a couple weeks ago, he was on one of the podcasts I listened to, and here's what he said. Never before in the history of humanity had a more diverse group of people gathered and been welcomed and loved and accepted than the early centuries of the church. A church service would include a Phoenician sailor, a Roman gladiator, a Jewish theologian, a former slave, prostitute, and they would all be gathered acknowledging Jesus as the Son and God as their Father, seeking grace, reading the letters of Paul, praying, singing, and worshiping together, and all being accepted. That had never happened before in human history. Everything was tribal. Not only that, these early Christians sacrificed their time, their energy, their comfort, and their material wealth in service of others who weren't even in their tribe. These people would gather and then go and find a sick family of Samaritans, let's say, and they would give them food, comfort, and clothing. The Romans, including the emperors, wrote about these people wondering, what is up with these Christians? Because the world had never seen it. It's one of the reasons Christianity sort of took over the Roman world. And I believe our world is prime for that today, as people are hungry for acceptance, lonelier than ever. And Jesus has provided in his church the ultimate opportunity for storge, for familial affection, and to know that everybody's included. And you know whose job it is to make sure everybody knows they're included and welcome? Somebody else. No, it's not. It's you. It's me. Now, you get a pass. If this is your first time, you get a pass. You're a guest. Hope you know that you're welcome. We love you. We're glad you're here. But next time you come, you're Chase Oaker. And that comes with a responsibility to let people know that you're welcome here. You're loved here. To not just show up and wait and think, well, nobody's going to talk to me. Talk to people. Like, take responsibility to greet somebody. If somebody's sitting alone, say, hey, why don't you sit with us? Introduce yourself. Come early. Stay late. You know, sometimes people will ask me, not a lot, but people, 10 a year, will ask me, because they'll notice, and you may have noticed this, that Christy, my wife, never sits with me. Like, she's here right now. I sit right here. She didn't sit with me. Peter did. Thank you, Peter. But not Christy. And so one time I asked Christy, hey, why don't you sit with me? And she gave me the answer. She said, well, I don't like you. No, that's okay. She didn't say that. But what she did say was, well, I will do that if you want me to. If it really means a lot to you, I will do that. But here's the thing, two things. One is, I'd be sitting by myself half the time because you'd be up on the platform. And secondly, you're already connected here. You already know people here. The people that I have the opportunity to sit around may not know anybody. They may not be connected. It would be a whole lot better. You and I connect all the time. It'd be a whole lot better for me not to sit with you and to sit with other people that I can connect with and let them know that they're welcome here. And she's right. And so let's live a welcoming life. Another discipline is doing life together, not on our own, but doing life together. And it's a cliche, right? Tell you, yeah, do life together and all that. But it is a very, very different way to live. It takes discipline. It takes devotion to do that. I mean, listen to the passage we just read. Every day they continued to meet. Every day in the temple courts. Every day they met like this in large gatherings. They also broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Small group, praising God and enjoying favor of all the people. Every day they were together. They shared their meals together. And it wasn't just them. They also pulled other people in. You know, it says the Lord added to their number daily those who were coming in. So it wasn't an insular group. They kept inviting people outside the group, people who weren't Christian, you know, all that. Hey, come, you know, hang with us, come to this, come, you know. And they lived, they were together. And you can think about, well, yeah, that was 2,000 years ago. I mean, they didn't have, I mean, you know, they, what did they have to do anyway, right? They didn't have TV. They didn't have, like, they're just a bunch of bored people. And, you know, they had all the time in the world. That's not true. 2,000 years ago, they had no conveniences like you and I have. They were day laborers who, if it was light outside, they were working. And the only time they weren't working is when it was dark. And then they had to figure out dinner and supper and all that kind of stuff. But when they did, they, even though they were busier than we are, thought, hey, rather than just us eating, who could we invite? Who could we include? Now, that gets me back to my grandmother I talked about earlier. So she ended up graduating from high school in Waco, going to college in Ohio, where she met my granddad. And my granddad became a pastor, so she was a pastor's wife. He was a Nazarene pastor in Georgetown, Kentucky for decades. And my granddad was like the ultimate extrovert. And in a sermon like this, those of you who are extroverts, you're loving this sermon so far. You're like, of course, everybody be doing this already? Why do you even have to talk about it? I mean, that's just what you do. I'm an introvert, okay? So for me, it's like, oh man, I don't want to do all this. But right, and I do, but it just, we need a little more time. We need some space, and that's okay. Extroverts, give us a break. It will get there. It just takes us a while to warm up to this, okay? And we need a little bit of space. So my grandmother was a little bit more of an introvert than my granddad, for sure, because he was such an extrovert. So he was only a pastor, but he also repaired TVs in the day because he could get into the home of every new person back decades and decades ago. You had to set up your TV. He didn't charge money. He just wanted to get in people's homes and say, hey, why don't you come to church? He was the chaplain of the police, state police. He was chaplain of the hospital there. And so he was meeting people all the time. And so that what that meant with my granddad is my grandmother never knew who was going to be invited throughout the day to be at dinner. Never knew who would be invited to stay that night or for a week or a year at their house. She had no idea. She just always kept a guest room ready, always had extra food, always had extra seats at the table. She was an amazing cook. And it wasn't just people he didn't know. It was that. People he did know, people that he would see. Hey, come eat with us. Come be with us. You need help? Come stay with us. And that was their way of life. And my mom and her sister are leaving tomorrow for a cruise together for a couple weeks. And they had this incredible privilege of growing up in a home like that. And imagine if our kids could grow up in a home like that, of just hospitality and just, and all it, it's not that complicated. It's just thinking, if you're going to go somewhere for dinner or eat dinner at home, or just, hey, who could we include? Who could we invite? Who could we think about? And living more of a shared life. It's why as a church, we're built around small groups. We're actually not built around this. This is important. Being in rows like we are right now is, God does things, it's unique as we gather, and like they said in the temple courts, in large groups, and Paul calls it the foolishness of preaching, what happens right now and how God speaks through that, and as we gather and we worship. But most of life change doesn't really happen in rows, it happens in circles. And that's why we're built around teams. We talked about that last week. Many hundreds of you got into ministry teams, it's awesome, and getting into groups as well, and being in small groups of people where you can do life together is vital. But it takes discipline. It takes devotion. It won't just happen. It's easier not to. You have to push through all that to get to storge. The third discipline is care for one another. That's a sacrificial discipline because we're overwhelmed with our own lives. So it takes something to say, I'm not going to be so fixated on my life that I can't see your need. In fact, the deal is, in storge, is because your family, if you have a need, it's not your need, it's our need, it's my need. It's not just when I hear something going on, it's like, oh man, it stinks to be you. And it's like, no, okay, what are we gonna do? It's a we life, not a me life. I mean, listen to, again, what the passage said. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Anyone, everyone, They all. So much so, a couple chapters later, Luke, who's writing the story, gives us even more. This is amazing. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own. They shared everything they had. And God's grace was so powerfully at work in them that there were no needy persons among them. God's grace was so mightily at work in them that there were no needy persons among them. There were no needy people. Why? For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. Nobody was needy. Why? Because they took care of each other. I mean, just unbelievable, right? But the whole spirit was, hey, we have a shared life. Everything I have is God's. You have a need. Well, I'm not going to ignore that need. We're going to meet that need. We're going to be a community where there are no needs. That's pretty crazy, right? Crazy good. You know, over the years, I've been at this church for a long time, since 1989. And I've been in small groups of not the same one because they've multiplied and all that. And but been in small, we, Christy and I have been in small groups all the way from 1989 to including now. And one thing I've noticed, and I've always been so amazed, is how this just spontaneously happens when people are in groups together as Christians and God's grace is at work in our lives, is this just happens. And when people have a need, it's been so cool to see groups come around that need. And I can think of times in groups I've been where people have lost jobs and the group is like, you know what? We're going to handle your mortgage. We don't want you to worry. You're not going to lose your house. Not if you're in our group. I remember hearing one person in our small group say to another when he was going through a really hard time, he was saying, I don't know if I have faith in God anymore. And I love what he said. He said, you know what? You don't have to have faith in God anymore. It's okay because I do. I have faith in God for you. So you just hang in there. I'll have faith. You hang in there and you'll get it back. And there'll be a time where you're going to have to pay me the favor. You're going to have to give me your faith because I'm going to lose mine. But I get it. We're going to get through this together. That's storge. That's a we life. That's a together life. And that's why it's so important to be on a team or in a group or something like that. Because when you go through something and you don't have it, like as a pastor, and we'll figure out ways to care for people, but one of the first questions I ask, usually is the first question I ask, when I find out somebody's going through some real difficulty or tragedy, be like, hey, are they in a group? Because if I hear they're in a group, then I'm like, okay. I mean, we're going to pray and all that, but they're going to be all right. But when I get the answer, no, they're not. They're not connected. It's like, oh boy. That's going to be a challenge. We're going to help them. But man, it would have been so much better. It's just so important to be in a group, to both give and receive care. And so when you put all this together, right, a we life, not a me life, to follow Christ, a storge life, pretty stinking cool, right? That all of us have this thing in us, like my grandmother did, to connect as a little child, and she's pulled into this family. And the church is the family of God, but it is a different way to live life that takes devotion. So let's just go through this real quick. A we life includes everybody. So let me just ask you, this weekend, this week, how can you be more inclusive? Even before you leave today, you can just leave. But why not just say hi to somebody? You don't know. Reach out to somebody. A we life also does life together. How can you express that? Maybe it's getting in a group. I mean, if you're not in a group, that's a great step to take. If you're in a group, actually show up. Make it a priority. But even this week, why not just think of one time where you can think, hey, I'm going to do this alone, or we're going to do this as a couple, or we're going to do this as a family, but what would it look like to actually invite somebody to do this with us, to eat dinner with us, to go to ice cream with us, to walk to school with us, to whatever it is? Just choose one thing. It'll be cool. It really will. And you won't do it, or at least if you're like me. Some of you are extroverts, you're already doing it. But you know, if you're like me, you're not going to do it unless you hear a message like this. Will encourage you to do it. And then care for one another. Is there somebody in your life you know they need a call? You know they need you to reach out to them. Because of this sermon, there was somebody that I have neglected that is in deep need, and it reached out to say, okay, we need to connect. And he got teary about it. And yep, need to connect. And so if you're in need and you're not in a group and all that, I'm not callous about that. If you're not in a group and or maybe you are in a group and you need help, let us know. Call the church. I need to talk to a pastor. I'm hurting. I'm in need. There's a practical need, a spiritual need, whatever it is. We want to know that. This is family. And let us care. And because none of us can, life's a team sport because it gets hard. And so let us do that for you. And one of the things I love about my grandmother's story is, here's this little 8-year-old girl walking around, not knowing where to find what, she doesn't even know how to word what she's feeling the need for, but we know it, it's storge, familial affection. She doesn't have it. How is she going to get it? And you know where she found it? Church. And people who were actually praying they would meet somebody like her, that they could include into their family. And that's what church is. Church is a place where we get to express the heart of God, which is, come, all who are weary and heavy laden, come. We get to be the invitation people. We get to be the family that welcomes people in. And I hope we're praying that what happened 2,000 years ago, Lord, adding to their number daily, adding to their family, every day new people, that we're just, hey, you know what? We've been praying for you. We've been hoping you would come. We're really glad you're here. That's church. Let's pray together. Father, I thank you for pulling us into your family. And in our world, especially right now, which is so divided and disconnected, God, would you help us really feel your heart for us, that you love us, that you want us to be your children. And for some people right now, maybe it's an opportunity for the first time to say, yes, God, I want to be your child. I want to be in your family. I want a relationship with you. And you've been hoping for that. And I pray they just begin a relationship with you and come into your family. Father, I pray for those who are not connected and it's hard to take a step to connection. God, would you give them the umph to do it? And would you help those of us who are connected to care enough to reach out, to care enough to make that easier. Father, we thank you for the fact that we get to live a we life, not just a me life, that you want us to flourish. You want us to experience these four loves exponentially better than we will without you. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.